My name is Eugene Sprague. I'm with the law firm of Barenbaum Weinschenk, and I'm here this morning on behalf of the Board of County Commissioners of Montrose County. With me this morning are Commissioners David White, Ronald Henderson, and the county attorney. May it please the court. This case presents three issues for review. First, may the Board of Trustees of Montrose Memorial Hospital, a public county hospital, transfer the trustee's statutorily mandated responsibility for governance of the hospital to a private nonprofit corporation via the means of a lease. Second, does the Board of County Commissioners of Montrose County have standing to seek a declaratory judgment that the action of the Board of Trustees, which is a local public body subject to the Colorado Open Meetings Law, is void because the trustees failed to comply with the notice requirements of that statute? And third, do the notices that were posted and which are at issue in this case satisfy the full and timely notice provisions of the statute? The first issue raises a question of first impression for this court. It regards the interpretation and application of the statute that provides for the establishment of county public hospitals and that defines the powers and duties of the board of the public trustees which govern and control the hospital. Specifically, the case requires the court to consider the relationship between CRS 253304, which sets forth the powers and duties of the trustees, and CRS 253313, which provides that the trustees have the discretion to rent or lease the hospital.
So let me interrupt you, if I could, real quick, on this first issue.
Yes, sir.
I agree with you. It's an important issue. The question that I have for you is, when is the first time that the Board of County Commissioners raised the 253304 powers and duties and brought it to the attention of the trial court?
I believe that it was brought to the attention of the trial court, Judge, in different ways. First, I think it was brought to the attention of the trial court at the outset of the case with the filing of the complaint in which the commissioners argued that the lease related activities of the trustees were ultra vires and unlawful. It's true that the complaint doesn't specifically aver that the lease circumvents the statutorily mandated powers of the trustees, but a significant portion of the testimony at the trial dealt with the effect of the purported lease on the trustees' duties and responsibilities regarding governance and supervision of the hospital, and the impact of the lease on the commissioner's power to safeguard the interests of Montrose County in certain key financial matters. During the trial, the appellees themselves testified regarding their motivation for forming the nonprofit corporation and approving the lease, stating that their actions were based on their desire to fundamentally change the nature of the governance of the hospital, turn it from a governmental entity into a private nonprofit entity.
Counsel, at that point, did you ask the trial court under Rule 15 to conform to the evidence that was had been brought in during the trial, to alert the trial court that you also wanted the trial court to take that into consideration as a part of its ruling?
There was no specific Rule 15 motion made on that point, Your Honor.
And the trial court didn't address it either in its order, I noticed.
It did not address it in its order. However, in closing argument that the county commissioners presented to the trial court, the county commissioner specifically argued that they were concerned about and questioning the authority of the trustees to convert the hospital from a public hospital subject to governance and control by trustees appointed by the county commissioners to governance and control by the directors of a nonprofit corporation which are not appointed by the county commissioners.
That was in your rebuttal argument, right?
That is correct.
So the trustees had already gotten up and said what they were going to say. So you got the last word, and that's when it first came in. Is that correct?
From a procedural point of view, Your Honor, that's correct. However, under Colorado law, as I understand it, if in closing argument, the sum and substance of the argument that is now raised on appeal was put before the court, that is sufficient to preserve it for appeal. Now, with respect to the merits of the argument, As I noted, the two statutory sections that the court has to wrestle with are 24.3304, which sets out the powers and duties of the trustees, and then 25.3313, which is the power to lease. The County Hospital Act is a comprehensive legislative scheme. It provides for the creation, governance, and control of the hospital. It defines the relationship between the trustees and the commissioners, and it fixes the duties and powers of the trustees. And as such, it has to be considered as a whole so as to give a consistent, harmonious, and sensible effect to all of its parts. Now, there's no dispute that 25.3313 provides the trustees with the discretion to lease the hospital. And that's absolutely clear. That's what the statute says. But that power, that discretionary authority, cannot be read in isolation, nor applied to mean that the trustees, through a lease, can circumvent the public governance and control contemplated by that statute. The trustees' power has to be interpreted, I believe, and applied in a manner that is consistent with the statutory duties and powers that are set forth in 25.3304. I think those enumerated powers establish the legislature's intent to invest governance of and supervisory authority over the hospital in public trustees, public hospital trustees appointed by the commissioners. What's happened here is that a nonprofit has been formed, effective governance and control of the hospital has now been transferred to a board of directors of that private nonprofit corporation, which are not appointed by the trustees, or by the commissioners, rather, and which cannot be removed by the commissioners. Moreover, the lease here changed fundamentally the relationship between the commissioners and the trustees. Under the statute, for example, the trustees have the power to acquire real property and personal property for use in the operation of a hospital, but that acquisition is subject to the approval of the commissioners. For example, under the statute, bonded indebtedness can be issued by the trustees for use and operation of the hospital, but that has to be approved by the commissioners. Moreover, as I just noted, the statute contemplates that elected public officials, the commissioners, will appoint the trustees to operate the hospital, to govern the hospital. And here what we have is the commissioners have effectively been removed from that process because the control of the hospital is now in the hands of the directors of a private nonprofit corporation, which will be appointed by the directors. So you have a self-perpetuating board appointing the directors of the hospital. And they are no longer subject to the appointment of or removal by the commissioners. I think what the statute contemplates in 25.3304, indeed in the entirety of that statute, is a link between public control of the hospital, between the commissioners and the trustees, which has been uncoupled by this lease. And the operation of the hospital now is in the hands of a private, not-for-profit corporation. I grant you that the statute gives the trustees the authority to lease the hospital, but I don't think it gives them the authority to fundamentally alter the relationship between the commissioners and the trustees, or that it gives them the power to confer upon the directors of the nonprofit powers that they themselves would not have if they, meaning the trustees, were governing the hospital directly and actively. For example, as we just discussed, you know, they now, these private directors now have the authority to acquire by lease real or personal property for use in the operation of the hospital, but it's no longer subject to the control of the commissioners. They can issue bonded indebtedness without the consent or approval of the commissioners. And I think importantly, they have total and complete control over all of the assets of the hospital, including all of its cash assets. At the time of the lease, over $40 million of cash and cash equivalents were effectively transferred by the lease from the control of the trustees, and the statute says they have exclusive control and use of that money to the directors of this nonprofit private corporation. With time running here, let me quickly turn to the issue of whether or not the open meetings law has been violated here. And to get to that issue, we first have to address whether or not the commissioners have standing to raise that issue. At the trial, and in their pleadings, the trustees argued that there is no standing for the commissioners or the Board of County Commissioners to bring an action challenging whether or not the statute has been violated, because the board is not a citizen within the meaning of the open meetings law. I argue that, you know, first of all, the Board of County Commissioners is a person within the meaning of the Declaratory Judgments Act and has sufficient standing, assuming it can show injury in fact to a legally cognizable interest, to assert that there's been a violation and that the actions taken by the trustees should be declared null and void for ab initio. I take that position because here there was an injury in fact. The injury in fact is the change in the nature of the relationship affected by this lease, the relationship between the county commissioners and the trustees. The statute clearly, as I understand it, and view it, as I said, envisions a direct link between the commissioners, between public control of this hospital and the trustees and how they govern and operate the hospital. The lease changes that relationship. I think that is the injury in fact, and it's to a legally cognizable interest, because it's a statute, it's the county hospital statute that creates that relationship and makes that relationship something that is to be respected and preserved. The trustees' argument that you couldn't have a lease that would allow its new board to operate the hospital doesn't make any sense to me. At least could have easily been drafted that would have respected the powers and duties of the trustees. For example, the lease could have said that if you want to acquire by lease real or personal property for use in the operation of the hospital, you have to get the consent of the trustees subject to the approval of the Board of County Commissioners. The lease could have been structured and written so as to say if you want to issue bonded indebtedness, you have to get the approval of the Board of County Commissioners. All of that could have been done in a way that would have respected the authority of the trustees as set forth in the statute and the ability of a lessee to operate the hospital on a daily basis. Now, with respect to the notices at issue in this case, it is our position that the notices did not give full and timely notice as required by the open meetings law. There's no question about the circumstances under which they were posted. There's no question that they were posted 24 hours in advance of the meetings, that they were posted in the hospital administrative offices behind a door that had a glass in it that you could look through, and you could see these notices posted on a wall 10 feet behind that glass.
You have 2 minutes left, but briefly, there were factual findings made by the trial court on the notice.
And I would submit to you that the factual finding that those notices could be read is one that is arbitrary and capricious and should be set aside. Mr. Glassman, the chairman of the Board of Trustees, testified he couldn't read the agenda of the notice of the October 14th meeting because he just couldn't read it from 10 feet. Dr. Winkler testified that he stood outside the door during the trial, which was months after the notice was posted in this case, looked through that window and said he could read it. It was never identified. If you reviewed the record, you know that the font sizes of these notices is substantially different. You know, the ability to read these notices depends upon two factors: the font size and whether or not you have the eyesight of an eagle. If you don't have the eyesight of an eagle, you can't read the agendas. I defy you to read those agendas from 10 feet. And those agendas do not specifically identify what was going to happen here, even though the trustees knew precisely what was going to happen here. This is not a case where nobody really knew what was going to happen at these meetings that are at issue here. The whole point of these meetings was to form the nonprofit, transfer the authority from the trustees to that nonprofit, and enter into this lease. There was no reason for the agendas not to fully and completely describe what was going to happen at these meetings. This is not a case where, you know, you couldn't tell what was going to happen. For those reasons, I submit to you that the decision of the trial court should be overturned and the lease should be determined to be void ab initio. Thank you.
May please the court. My name is David Yoon. My registration number is 23448. I represent defendants and appellees, the trustees of the Montrose Memorial Hospital. As the council mentioned, plaintiff has raised three issues: whether the trustees of Montrose Memorial Hospital exceeded their authority under the Hospital Act by entering into a lease with the nonprofit corporation; two, whether the Board of County Commissioners has standing to assert violations of the open meetings law; three, whether the trustees of Montrose Memorial Hospital violated the Colorado open meetings law. Before I address plaintiff's arguments, I think it's important to keep in mind the standard of review. While statutory interpretation of the lower court is reviewed for under de novo standard of review, factual findings are reviewed under the clearly erroneous standard. If there's any evidence in the record to support the trial court's finding, those findings should not be disturbed on appeal. Now, plaintiffs first argue that the trustees exceeded their authority under the Hospital Act, one, because the lease improperly transferred the governance of the hospital to a nonprofit corporation, and two, because the lease was a sale. And Judge Roman asked, where was the first part of that argument preserved? That argument was not preserved, Your Honor. The trial was conducted that this lease was not a lease, but a sale. The first time this issue ever came up, as Judge Roman mentioned, was in rebuttal closing argument in a factual statement. And I would submit to you, if the court looks at it, there's two sentences there. And the two sentences merely says that, and I'll read it to you, Your Honor. It just merely says that that the trustees have the authority to enter into the lease, not the authority to change the governance of the hospital. There's no legal analysis whatsoever. There's no arguments that even resemble what they're arguing on appeal. They don't cite to the authority set forth under what they rely on now, 25.3304, or how the lease circumvents those authorities in the rebuttal closing argument. And that argument was also made at the rebuttal, didn't even give us an opportunity to respond. And as counsel mentioned, the trial court did not address that argument because the argument wasn't made. So it did not give adequate opportunity for the trial court to decide that issue. So I would submit, if that issue was not preserved, the only issue is a factual finding of whether this lease is a sale or a lease. And the trial court relied upon the evidence presented and expert testimony presented, and found, if the court reads the transcript, that defendant's expert witness testimony was more persuasive than plaintiff's, and that this was actually a lease and not a sale. So I would submit that the court can resolve this issue under the clearly erroneous standard and find that this was, the first part of it was not preserved, and the second part is review for clearly erroneous standard, and the trial court relied upon the credibility of the expert witnesses and made a findings of fact, and that resolves everything. But even if the court wanted to address the argument that they're now making, I would submit that plaintiff's incorrect in claiming that the trustees cannot delegate the governance of the hospital to a nonprofit corporation. Although, and I'll refer to 25.3304, does give authority to the trustees to govern the hospital, it doesn't say you cannot ever delegate it to, delegate that power to another entity. In fact, that provision has to be read with the 25.3.313. And 25.3.313 states the public hospital board having control over the hospital and management may in its discretion rent or lease the said hospital to a nonprofit corporation incorporated in Colorado for, and here's the important part, for the purposes of conducting a hospital. Because, and the word conduct is not defined in the statute, but the common understanding of the word conduct is to manage, direct, and control. Therefore, the statute gives the trustees the authority to lease the hospital to a nonprofit corporation so that the nonprofit corporation, rather than the trustees, can manage, direct, and control the hospital.
Does the board see management there beyond the trustees at that point? To it's at least one removed from the trustees. How does it oversee that? I mean, my understanding in looking at the legislative scheme is that the Board of County Commissioners is to oversee the trustees and can even remove them.
Yes.
Now you have this layer that goes down further. How's the Board of County Commissioners to govern at that point?
Sure. The Board of County Commissioners have limited authorities to oversee the Board of Trustees, and that authority still is in effect. For example, the power to appoint and remove the trustees still exists. And this is important because the trustee still retains power. They have oversight responsibility over the lease. If the lease is breached for cause, then the trustees can, if there's reason to breach the contract, if the contract was breached, the trustees could terminate it. And the oversight of the county commissioners exists over the trustees.
So, my understanding is there's an overlap that five of the trustees are also running the nonprofit. So, if the Board of County Commissioners removes a trustee in the middle layer, they're still presiding at the nonprofit level, aren't they? How does that change the governance at that point? How do they reach them, the folks that are running the nonprofit?
They reach them through the trustees. The trustee still has governance over the board of directors of the nonprofit corporation. For example, under the lease, the contract says all monies collected, cash, deposits, investments, accounts receivables, promissory notes, donations, gifts, bequests are restricted for the operation of the hospital and for healthcare services of the community. The lease requires the nonprofit corporation to provide the trustees with financial statements, audit statements, utilization statistics, reports, list of insurance policies, and operating budget for the hospital. The nonprofit corporation must disclose information that will allow the trustees to determine whether the hospital is vulnerable to experiencing severe financial distress. If so, the trustees may demand the hospital to provide an action plan, and if the financial distress is extreme, they can terminate the lease. And the trustees also are required to visit and examine the hospital at least twice a month. They are required to hold organization meetings, they are required to have monthly meetings, and they are required to file with the Board of County Commissioners semi-annual reports that include a statement of all asset receipts and expenditures during the preceding 6 months. They're also required to certify to the Board of County Commissioners the amount necessary to maintain and improve the hospital for the ensuing year. So the trustees still has oversight responsibility over the hospital through the lease and some of the statutory provisions. And Board of County Commissioners still retained whatever responsible oversight that's provided over the trustees. So I would submit that you have to read the 304 authorities along with the 313, and the way to read that is if the hospital is not leased, 304 provides that the trustees will govern the hospital. But when the hospital is leased to a nonprofit corporation pursuant to 25313, then the lease, not the 304, governs the trustees' authorities over the nonprofit corporation. Any other interpretation would render 313 meaningless, because you can't lease the operation of a public hospital to a nonprofit corporation without delegating the governance, without delegating the employment, right to, you know, purchase equipment, right to finances, as well as operations. So when you read those two together, I believe 304 is talking about governance when it's not leased. Once it's leased, then you look at the lease to determine the trustee's authority over the nonprofit. Now, going to the, unless the court has further questions, if you go to the open meeting, I'll move on to the open meetings law.
Counsel, specifically, what did the trial court find insofar as the visibility of the notice?
The trial court made a factual finding that it was visible based on Dr. Winkler's testimony. And based on his testimony that he was able to see the notice, the trial court found that it was visible. And if there's any evidence supported, as I understand these clearly erroneous standard, if there's any evidence supported in the record to support the trial court's finding, it should be affirmed. And in this case, the trial court found that the notices were posted 24 hours, as counsel mentioned, before each meeting, that at a public place, which is the administrative offices of a public hospital, which is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and the public could come into the administrative office and look at it when their offices are open. When it's closed, there's a window which you can see. And all of the notices, by the way, were posted during the weekday, and the offices were open during the weekday, because we were talking about the posting between October 11th, which was a Monday, through October 15th, when was the last meeting. And all of those days are Monday through Friday. So the public could have went into the office, and even if you can't see it, and you know, from the window, as counsel suggests, which was disputed by the court, you could actually go there into working normal business hours and actually go look at it. And the statute doesn't require that the posting has to occur 24 hours when the office is open. It just says you should post 24 hours before the meeting. And in this case, it was posted 24 hours before the meeting, and it was available to the public to access it. So I don't think there's any violation. The court doesn't even have to address the standing issue and just say that that there was no violation, as the trial court found, and that resolved the matter. But if the court were to address the standing, I just want to point out one thing. OML was designed to give citizens access to the government business. It was not intended to allow intergovernmental oversight or review. They're saying that a public entity should have access through another public entity's business through the OML. And I would submit to you, OML was designed to give access to the general public so that they can participate and not the Board of County Commissioners. For all the reasons set forth in our brief and the arguments we made, we ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Counsel, and thank you both for fine arguments. The case will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course.